Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
G'day, folks. How you going? This is the Mullet. Adam O'Brien, coming live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia for the flagship show here on the Lethal Mullet Network, the Lethal Mullet Podcast. And it's episode number 150, folks. Yes, 150 episodes in of the show. And I tell you what, I am pumped to get to this, you know, amazing episode that we're going to be chatting about tonight. One of the great ninja movies ever made. And of course, one that's got some really interesting stuff in it. And it's the most, I personally think, commercial film that show did of the time. Of course, we're talking about Shokasugi's Pray for Death. And, you know, I've got a dear friend years ago at school called Adrian who always told me about, you know, this is the best one. Although I'd always thought, that, you know, we had Revenge of the Ninja, we had Enter the Ninja, which were constantly on free-to-air TV, folks, right? Late at night, mind you, considering, you know, the decapitations and all the blood and gore that came with it being a ninja film back in those days. You know, a lot of, I think parents thought, oh, it's an Akihara movie, man, you know, not really realizing that, yes, they were assassins, particularly in these movies. But Shokasugi made it something else, particularly as we got into Revenge of the Ninja. Enter the Ninja was interesting because it really explored, first of all, what it meant to be a ninja in the cinematic sense. We got the good ninja in the white and, of course, the black ninja in black. You know, it was very visual, very easy, and you kind of knew what things were what in that film. And, of course, we got Franco Nero as the ninja. But Revenge of the Ninja obviously changed things. And we got an amazing film, which was really, you know, in a not-so-connected trilogy of films, was Shokasugi taking the limelight as the good guy. And in Revenge of the Ninja, there was just some amazing visuals. And it certainly was a film, I think, that needs a lot more credit these days than what it got in the, you know, it's still extremely popular, but, you know, action films, even today, owe a lot to the stunts done on that one. And, of course, just the fact of the ninja work, if that could be considered a cinematic thing, on that one. Of course, then led to, of course, and this is all canon films, by the way, you know, Golden Globus films, that is. And as they got into Ninja 3, The Domination, which, you know, for show wasn't really the lead in that one. It was Lucinda Dickey instead. And we are going to cover that very soon. Now, it's a film I had not seen back in the day. I'd seen trailers, I'd seen bits and pieces here and there, but very much like They Live, I didn't see it till, you know, a couple of years ago. And that film really does, you know, mash basically breakdance with ninja, or just dance in general. It's really trying to bring in the two things that canon films were famous for. But I digress. We have a few years later where shows gone on, worked on different other companies' work, and of course, one of those being Pray for Death. It is an amazing, I think if you look at more 80s feel, this is the most 80s it gets. It's got the 80s fantasy sort of style of ninja in some ways. There's a really interesting intro into the film too, which has Sho playing a TV ninja. That's right. Kind of spoofing what he really did in, you know, the films that he was involved in. Also, the great thing about this film is too, we get ninja armor, right? Which I think would be a very real thing, wouldn't it? Considering that we know the breakdown of a lot of those things now, thanks to, you know, a lot of people, you know, deciphering some of the clues and stuff into old, like samurai documents and ninja scrolls that we see on, obviously, the internet and stuff like that. Obviously, I've talked about a book by the name of The Book of Ninja, which doesn't even have any martial arts in it, but that was a scroll, the Bunsen Shukai. So, you know, there's a very real stuff out there about what the ninja are and what they really were, and that they were samurai, which makes a lot more sense. But also the fact that samurai wore armor, so why wouldn't a ninja when they're going in full battle, you know? So, again, all that's pulled into this, you know, it's a fantasy film at the end of the day. It, you know, has, you know, mythical sort of ninja elements, but it also has a very gritty feel to it, particularly the way that things are dealt with in the film itself. Show's got a family in it as well. Like, he did in a number of the films, like even in Black Eagle, his sons are involved in that, Shane and Kane Kasugi, who are respectively martial arts in their own right and actors too. But what's great about it too is we get to see, you know, what happens to, obviously, people that take advantage of families like that, of well-trained assassin warriors. And, of course, revenge is what it is. This could be considered a companion piece some ways to Revenge of the Ninja. It's definitely, of the Kasugi films, next to Rage of Honor, my favourite of Show's films. Now, Rage of Honor's up there, but I think it's very much, you know, more a cop meets ninja sort of film. It still has everything, has the swords and everything. We're going to be chatting about that tonight. Show's episode number 150 to this one, because I know it's a beloved film by many. And certainly one that's a lot of fun to revisit. I certainly hadn't seen it in years, and it took a while to find, because it's not on DVD out here in Australia. You really have to look high and low to try and find it. And I found it in the UK. And it's come out on what they call the Cult Movie Collection. And you can tell because it's obviously got the film censors style of the UK they got over there too. But this film was put out by Transworld Entertainment, and you know, it is fantastic. So it's a region 2 DVD, this one, but it's great. It looks fantastic. It is in 16:9 aspect ratio, and it is a stereo copy, but at the end of the day, you know, this came out in 2015 on DVD in the UK. It looks fantastic, and we're really going to enjoy that tonight and have a little bit of look at Show Kasugi's career and celebrate what it is to be a movie ninja. G'day mate, how you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host Mark Newbold into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe, all here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
Hi, this is Tom Caldwell from Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network, inviting you to check out our show. Once a month, we release an episode about the films of the great master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. You can find us on Facebook at Hitchcock Good Evening, on Twitter at Good Evening Pod, and along with myself and Brandon Shea Mutala and Chris Haig, we bring you a fun and friendly show that you can enjoy alongside your viewing of the films of Alfred Hitchcock. On behalf of the program, I wish you good evening.
And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, as promised, we're going to be chatting a little bit about Mr. Shoichi Kasugi, of course, better known, his stage name is Sho Kasugi. And, of course, he was born in June 17, 1948, Japanese martial artist. And, of course, he's also an extremely popular 80s actor, in particular, action star. Known for quite a lot of different training, not just in karate or, ninjutsu, but he was trained in Shindo Jinen Ryu Karate, Kendo, Judo, Iaido, Kobudo, Aikido, and Ninjutsu as well. All right. He's also a karate champion, which is something that definitely helped him, not just from Japan, but when he moved to the United States and pursued an acting career to get more ahead, and certainly into this sort of action career that he's got, he was able to use those talents of being in the karate and particularly running karate dojos and all that sort of stuff too. He was part of the trilogy of films that we've often talked about here from Canon Films. We're talking, of course, of Enter the Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, and, of course, Ninja 3, The Domination. All very seminal films, ones that I watched several times a year, each one, and particularly now the third one, which I didn't really get a chance to see as a kid. So that was from the Canon Films. And then, of course, he was in the starring role in The Master with Lee Van Cleef, which, sad to say, folks, is one I've been trying to get a hold of on eBay, and I was sent the wrong DVD. So that whoever's sending it from wherever they're going to send it again. So hopefully I get to see The Master finally. But I got somebody else's order, unfortunately. So he was born in Minato, Tokyo, Japan. And he's been so active. I think that's the great thing about, the work that show's done over the years. He's active not just in film, but also writing books as well. So at the age of 19, he left Japan to study in LA when he got a bachelor's degree in economics from CSULA. From here, obviously, too, he'd been perfecting more of martial arts skills from different styles. And here's where I really like Shokosugi in particular. He's like me, I don't want to just learn one style of martial arts. Although you can really get a lot of satisfaction in doing one style of martial arts. And I think it's interesting for me in particular because, I've been around in the martial arts well for more than 30 years now. I've had a chance to do different styles and really, get a good sense and respect for those styles. And yet in the style I'm currently in, there's some that have never even tried other styles or let alone heard of other martial arts that are out there too. So it's an interesting dichotomy of what, people know and what they don't know out there. But that's where I really love, particularly somebody of his experience level, just how much he's done over the years. At the age of whatever he is now, 73, I think, he's got that behind him. And it's not just the acting career, it's his real martial arts career, So he was perfecting his skills further and also learning more, a larger variety of stuff. So he learned Shingi Chan, which is a Chinese style, Taekwondo. And you could tell by some of the kicks he's done in some of the movies, he's definitely adding some Taekwondo flair to him. Japanese Shito Ryu and Shotokan Ryu Karate, which is interesting. So again, it's one of the styles I've learned, which is Shotokan Karate. It's the first martial art I did was that. And Shotokan is very strong and, disciplined style of karate. Everything's rigid and locked down and strong stances and very low stances. Which is interesting because karate in Okinawa is slightly different. They don't go so low in their stance. Things are a little bit lighter on the feet sometimes, in particular like Goju-Ryu and some of the elements there too, which is interesting. Now, he's the father of Kane Kasugi and, of course, Shane Kasugi. Kane Kasugi is one we probably know the most of these days because he's very active still. He's done his own ninja film too with, of course, a very, very, well-respected British martial artist, Scott Adkins, of course. Let's have a quick look at Kane because he does turn up in a lot of these films as well. Kane's great. Obviously, he had a big part in Revenge of the Ninja, also in, of course, the same sort of feel in Black Eagle, along with Shane as well, of course, too. He was born in 1974. He's 47 years old. And his parents are Sho and Shook Kasugi. So he's the son of Sho, and he's been in, of course, Revenge of the Ninja and Pray for Death, as well as some others. He's also a starring role is Jiraiya, the Ninja Black, in Ninja Sentai Kakuranga. and being the second American-born Sentai Senshi. He's also in Street Fighter Alpha and DOA, Dead or Alive, these video game adaptations you can get. He's also 5 seasons of the challenge program, Sasuke, which is, again, you know, something that Japan does quite well, is these game shows that use some very, very, you know, I think by modern standards now, the American and Australian audience in particular would be used to things like the ninja game shows, things like that. But a lot of it's gross-out comedy and stuff like that too. But, again, it was a challenge program called Sasuke. Kasugi has both been in American media in terms of films and stuff like that, and predominantly now in Japanese as well. He's considered a gaijin tarento, which means foreign talent, of course. And yeah, one of the great things about him is, too, that he's in... from what I've seen anyway in the, on his Twitter account and stuff like that, it involved heavily in gaming as well now too. So, I'm still able to read a little bit of, Japanese script. So I pick up things here and there, but, a lot of the times the great thing is he's sort of involved in modern, gaming all the time and stuff like that. I guess, you know, it's one way to keep the fans moving too with it too. So he's a voice actor for some of those video games and stunt actor as well. Obviously, Revenge of the Ninja being one of the big ones. And he's training in that too is great, fantastic. He's had different training than his father. So he's got kendo training, where his father had iaido, judo, karate, taekwondo, like his father. I think it's at his father's insistence of learning a style like that. Wushu and ninjutsu, which is interesting too. So he made his Japanese debut in Ryukyu no Kaze, which is Dragon Spirit. And it's the 31st entry in the NHK's longest running Taiga drama. So, which is interesting too. Obviously too, The Fighting King and The Fighting King 2 is involved in too. And he was also... in the action movie War with Jason Statham and Jet Li as well, which is interesting. He's worked with Corey Ewan, obviously Corey Ewan, we're huge fans of. One of the best fight choreographers from, you know, from Hong Kong. He was also in 2011, he was in his best friend's film. That's, of course, Sammy Hung. His father, of course, being the one and only Sammo Hung. In the movie Choi Li Fat, he was in as well. Obviously, Scott Atkins in 2013, he joined him in Ninja Shadow of a Tear, as well as in Tekken 2, Kazuya's Revenge. And, of course, he was in the manga and anime adaptation Terraformers. And that was a Takashi Miike film. Takashi Miike is one of the greats, folks, and we will be doing a lot of Takashi Miike over the next 6 months here. Everything from, you know, gangster films to, you know, dramas. And, of course, the amazing stuff that he's done in martial arts and samurai films as well. Quite a few that are well worth us looking at. And we will all hear too. And in recently he was in The Driver opposite, of course, Mark Dacascos. And which is interesting too, you know. It's and he's also going to be in One Night in Bangkok with Dacascos as well. So really, really interesting. And again, it just shows just how, you know, he's kind of taken on the mantle from his father. He's just such an amazing martial artist and just all around really cool guy. Now, people don't realize how tall Shokasugi is. Shokasugi is actually quite tall. He's 6'1". All right. Now, for, you know, a lot of the stuntmen and stuff like that, that we've read about in some of the action books and stuff, you know, they've had to double him. Some of them were quite a bit shorter than Shokasugi, particularly in Revenge of the Ninja, which is crazy. But again, the stunt work on those films, just second to none, fantastic. In Japan, he ran an internationally known group of martial arts schools, which were acting schools as well. So it was called the Shokasugi Institute. And now, obviously, he lives in LA now, but... most of the Kasugi films and the ones that the sons performed on were Revenge of the Ninja, Pray for Death, Black Eagle, Journey of Honor, also known as Kabuto, Shogun Maeda and Shogun Warrior. Of course, we've called it Shogun Maeda here, and we covered that quite a few episodes ago. Yeah, he did make a pretty damn huge comeback, and that was in 2009 with Wachowski Brothers produced film Ninja Assassin. And it was a great film. You know, it's solid, and of course, we got amazing and evil performance by his show, you know. He showed really how good an actor he is. And it's a great film. Probably a bit more amped up and more modern in terms of the action choreography, but it certainly was great. Now, folks, we're going to be looking at one of the great films, Pray for Death.
Wait. Hajime!
Yeah!
Yeah!
Welcome to the dojo. Leave your shoes outside the door.
All right, folks, here we go. We're going to chat about some of the martial arts you're going to see in this film and, of course, some of the weapons. We'll start with the firearms in this one. Of course, courtesy of the IMFDB.org, which is, of course, the Internet Movie Firearms Database. If you want to know about weapons used in these films, this is the one. Now, of course, Pray for Death, 1985 film, directed by Gordon Hassler, same director of Rage of Honor, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Hawaii Five-O, Chips, and Shogun Maeda. So you can see why I like this film, folks. In this, we get to see handguns used by, of course, just some of the police and stuff like that. It is the Smith & Wesson Model 15. Of course, revolver, six-shot, and, of course, it's a 38 Special. Pretty much the standard for the time before the automatic pistol came in. And we can see Shokosugi in a number of the scenes, not only dodging bullets here, but also, you know, disarming a lot of these gangsters and cops that are using those. We get to see some of the bad guys in this, one of them being Mr. Newman, played by Michael Constantine, and also his enforcer, Limehouse Willie, played by James Booth, both using M1911 45 ACP classic American pistols, obviously, Colt pistols and that. It is 1980s, folks, and of course, one of those things being, if James Booth is going to go around as a gangster, he's going to use, of course, a 9mm Uzi. And of course, that was something that was used in all the movies back in the 80s, of course. Also, we have James Booth as Limehouse Willie using an Intratec Tech 9, 9mm submachine pistol. Again, something you always used to see in a lot of these, you know, big action pieces from the 80s. Also, we all saw the Heckler & Koch HK-94. And that, of course, is a 9mm as well. It's basically a long-barreled MP5. We get to see that in the hands, of course, of the henchmen thugs, that, of course, Limehouse Willie's thugs as well. And that's where it gets interesting, folks, because the rest of the weaponry belongs to, of course, Akira, played by, of course, Shokosugi. Now, we get to see the classic ninja to, or the shinobi katana, which, of course, is the ninja sword with the classic square handguard. You know, you've got to think about ninja in this mythology, and particularly in the films. They used a square handguard because, first of all, it was a cheap sword. It was not the katana. It wasn't, you know, Daito or any of those others. This is a sword that is literally a tool. So they didn't really care just how good the sword was or vice versa. It was used as a stepladder. It was used by many other reasons other than just cutting. And we get to see that all the way through here. And the great things is the ninja armor, which is made of iron. You know, it's different. It's certainly not the same sort of samurai look that you get to see in films. This is a really tough, still samurai-like, but almost medieval look to it. Of course, we've got the chainmail with it. But it's still not something that's going to weigh down show from you know, doing all the amazing work. And, of course, the stuntmen that would have had to work on this picture as well. It really works. And, of course, we get to see a myriad of other ninja weaponry, which we've all talked about before here. And, again, this is a film that really is the peak of ninja skills and weaponry.
Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh yeah. Man, it's been a real busy day, you know. Oh wow.
Right on,
yeah.
Mate.
Hey. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage and enjoy chatting about, you know, films and all that sort of stuff. You know?
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
All right, folks, we're getting into the meat and potatoes of this film. This is a great little film. It really is. This is, if you want ninja, you don't get better than this film, folks. It just, it's as simple as that. It is not an ounce of fat in it when it comes to the script and the power of just, you know, again, something very similar to Revenge of the Ninja in some ways. It's kind of a retooling of the same idea. Yeah. It's revenge. It certainly is, you know, a murder in his family and stuff like that. But the character that Shokosugi plays gets to do a little bit more ninja-ing, if that's a word, this film. It's directed by, of course, Gordon Hessler, who obviously would go on to do a little bit more of Shokosugi movies a little bit later. And, of course, we're going to cover one of them in the next couple of weeks called Rage of Honor, which is a great flick. And I was lucky enough to get the Blu-ray of that one. Written by James Booth himself. There you go. And it stars Shokosugi, Norman Burton, James Booth, Kane Kasugi, Donna Key Benz, and, of course, Michael Constantine. Cinematography by Roy H. Wagner. Edited by Bill Butler and Stephen Butler. Music was by the man of the hour, of course, Thomas Chase. And actually, the music he does in this is really, really good. Again, classic 80s when you get down to it. The production company was Transworld Entertainment and distributed by the same company. It came out on the 9th of August, 1985. And it's a solid 92 minutes of non-stop action. The budget's estimated to be about $4 million. So definitely in that straight-to-video market if it was coming out these days, but I'm sure it would have been more expensive in today's money. So what's it all about? Well, basically it's about a retired ninja warrior, now married to an American woman. He goes to Los Angeles, where his wife is trying to start a new life for him and their two sons. What's interesting is once they get over there, he's mistakenly drawn into a conflict with an LA crime boss. And, of course, all of his hitmen and stuff like that as well. From here, he's basically got to take out justice. He's got to do the ninja thing. And that's what the film's all about, really is. You know, it gets down to a very similar sort of format that we've seen him do time and again. And it's just part of the ninja brand, isn't it, of doing that. Kind of part and parcel of those action movies of the time as well. Okay, let's get into the actual plot, and then we'll talk about some of the best scenes. So, Aiko is the American-born wife of Akira Saito, played by Shokosugi. Basically decides that they're going to immigrate from Japan to the United States, basically to bring up their two sons, Takeshi and Tomoya. And he's, at this stage, a Yokohama salaryman. That's his job. Now, from here, completely unbeknownst to the family itself, he's actually a highly skilled ninja who had protected the secrets of a temple, minded by, of course, his sensei, Koga, who's also his adopted father as well. Now, years before, Akira's brother Shoji, who's also brought up and trained by Koga, basically sought to steal from the temple in disguise, forcing Akira to engage in battle and killing. Akira's now, of course, disrupted by it all and meditates on it. And, of course, an attack from Koga to encourage him to wipe the guilt completely from his mind, and it kills him. From here, Akira announces his intent to basically go to the United States and start a new life. And he swears to never give away, of course, the secrets of being a ninja, all that sort of stuff. Of course, leaving that shadow world behind. So it's a great opening and something quite a bit different for, the films of Shokosugi. You know, there's some great ones that he's done with wild openings. You can think of Nine Deaths of the Ninja, even Enter the Ninja, which he himself is pretty much a big part of, well and truly overshadows Franco Nero, who knows nothing of martial arts. So it's a great one to do. When they get to LA, the Saitos meet with Sam Green, who's a widowed owner of a restaurant that's closed down, an apartment that Akira and Aiko have bought to live in and basically to be part of. Once their sale happens of the property, the store area of the building is broken into by
bunch of police, Sergeant Trumbull and Joe Daly. Both working for the local mobster by the name of Mr. Newman. And, of course, from here, Daly goes down to remove loose floorboards and puts a large white box underneath these floorboards. Of course, certain goods that might not be in their, put this way, their possession. Of course, part of this is, you know, necklace that's worth a certain amount of money. Next day, Limehouse Willie, which is Mr. Newman's informer, goes down there and waits until the building's completely blank and there's no one in there, only to find out the necklace is fully disappeared. Anyhow, he saw Sam Green's packed his luggage and left, and Willie assumes that he's skipping town with the jewels. He brutally kills Sam Green, and he still doesn't find the necklace. And of course, he's now suspicious of the family of the Saitos, and he's their next target. From here, Akira and Aiko basically start a new business. It's a Japanese restaurant. From here, the boys go out and enjoy the local store. And, of course, they confront local bullies, which are eyeing off Takeshi's bike where he's going out. And, of course, it's part of the 80s, you know, the time of the craze of BMX bandits and, you know, even just, you know, the likes of, well, Goonies had bikes as well. It was other movies that time. BMX craze in particular was big, you know, for the 80s. And it's interesting to see that in this action movie too. So we've got that. We've got Willie phoning Akira demanding that he deliver the necklace. Of course, he knows nothing about it. And he's told to go to Pier 25, otherwise his son's life is endangered. Of course, that's because they take his son and kidnap him. Curious, he goes to the cigar store and finds the broken door lock and the loose floorboards, and of course a grey thread from Daly's jacket, which shows that he's left-handed. These are all clues, of course, that Sho uses through his way of being a ninja and, of course, master assassin. So Kira arrives empty-handed at the pier and boards one of the ships. He's restrained by Willie's and his men. Kira claims that he is a left-handed man in a grey suit and took the necklace. Willie cuts him across the chest and he literally takes his son and threatens him with a blowtorch. Now, how low do you have to be like that, folks? Come on. Kira smashes the light above his head and uses his martial skills in ninjutsu to escape and takes his kid Tomoya with him. He listens to Aiko and goes to the police the next day. Meanwhile, Willie is convinced, this is what's interesting, that is the Saito's, it isn't the Saito's, and Newman still wants them eliminated because, of course, they're witnesses and know what's happening. Akira speaks with Lieutenant Anderson, and both the bad cops, Trumbull and Daly, are there, and they identified Willie from the mugshots. Anderson can't do anything keeping him away from Saito's without evidence. And this is where it gets interesting, because, of course, Kira is going to, of course, tell him he can find it. He agrees to help him and get it. But the Saito's opponent, Takeshi, kicks his soccer ball out the window. Tomoya goes out to recover it, but Aiko chases after him. Both are run down by Newman's thugs stationed outside in the car. So you can talk about a really cold way to hurt. Kira then, Shokusugi arriving a few seconds after and realised who the thugs were from the night before. And from here, the resulting struggle results in both men being killed. Tomoya is on life support, but Aiko's bruised, but still being kept overnight. Anderson ranges for police protection after this to keep the house and, of course, them at bay and keep them right. This is where the ninja gets his way. So Kira sneaks on board the yacht run by Willie, and during a party, cuts the pair and sneaks behind them. With a knife to Willie's throat, he warns him to stay away from him. Otherwise, he will pray for death. So there comes the line from the film, which of course gives the actual title to the movie. Ramir is able to escape during the confusion. Akira returns to the hospital to have a moment with his wife's body after she passes. He swears he will make everyone, including Willie, pay. Kira relocates the boys to a warehouse. Behind closed doors, he performs rituals. Ninja rituals, which we know too well, of course, from Revenge of the Ninja Ford and a lot of the other ninja movies, for that matter, folks. Creates a ninja sword blade in full garb. Kira prays to Aiko's spirit before donning the helmet that his father gave him. Now, this is where we get the steel helmet, folks, the amazing armor of Shokusugi. From here, Akira basically goes on full rampage. And without, I'm going to not spoil the rest of it, folks. You can guess what Shokosugi as Akira Saito does after this. But it's one of the most, one of the most greatest martial arts feats when it comes to acrobatics, weaponry, and just all around ninjutsu. It's really solid. Okay, so let's go quickly through the cast. We have Shokosugi as Akira Saito, we've already talked about it. James Booth as Limehouse Willie is pretty much second to the top. So let's have a quick look at it. James Booth, he was born in 1927 and died back in 2005. He's an English film and stage and television actor and screenwriter as well. He's best known for playing Private Henry Hook in Zulu. Now, anyone that's been in the army or the army cadets or anything in the military out here in Australia, and I could attest to this because my stepdad is a Vietnam veteran and even he had to watch Zulu in training. We're all shown Zulu for the way that British, Canadian and Australian forces are meant to basically follow rank and file. And you've got to watch Zulu. And of course, he's one of the big parts of Zulu as Private Henry Hook. He's known for his villainous roles, but comedy as well, with that Cockney flavour. You know, in some ways, you kind of look at it, James Booth was kind of an evil Michael Caine in some ways, you know. But he's very good. He was a punchy blend of toughness, potential evil, and irresistible charm variety, I quoted as saying. But, you know, he could have been a huge thing. He certainly has the look and the feel of, you know, somebody who's getting out there. He also turned down the lead role in Alfie, which went, of course, to, guess who? Michael Caine. But him being a screenwriter, of course, obviously the screenwriter of this film is interesting, and it's a great thing to be not only actor in something, but also that involved too. Norman Burton played Lieutenant Anderson, and he's an American stage and film actor, normally credited as Norman with two N's, at the end, Burton. So look at his filmography, folks. He was in, let's have a look, ones we know. Planet of the Apes in 1968 as the Hunt Leader. There you go, it's interesting. Escape from the Planet of the Apes. Diamonds of Forever as Felix Leiter. Now that makes sense, I do remember him from that. He was also in The Towering Inferno. What else we've got? Bloodsport as Agent Helmer. Yes, that's right, folks. He's in this film. You know, come on, Frank. You're costing us time and money. The US government can't afford to lose a guy like you. Yes. He was also in Deep Space in 88, Livewire, and American Ninja 5 as US ambassador on Caracas Haldan, final film role in 93. That's interesting. There you go. And we know him for that too. And, of course, Robert Ido as Koga. Michael Constantine as Mr. Newman. So how did it fare? I mean, this is something that was definitely a VHS hit. I mean, it was huge out here, particularly if you're an action fan like myself. But let's have a look at it. So we've got USA Today critic and movie reviewer, Joe Bob Briggs. He praised both Shokosugi, stating that Shokosugi, the hottest kick since Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee. And also praising Kosugi as the best kung fu man since Bruce Lee. Interesting. And of course, this is one of the best hits of 86, 87 out here in Australia. I remember it being on the shelves in the new release section for almost 3 to 6 months, particularly at the Amiga video we had as well, which is a lot of fun. So here's the releases you can get, folks. So Pray for Death was released on Blu-ray by Arrow, releasing on a special edition which contains high-definition presentation, using the MGM original unrated cut, optional English SDH subtitles for the deaf and hard of hearing, a new interview with Shokosugi. Now, I wonder if that's one that's going around on YouTube. So you may be able to see that already if you can't get a hold of this. There's an archival interview with ninjutsu demonstration from Kosugi from the film's New York premiere back in the 80s. Regional theatrical trailer, reversible sleeve featuring original and newly commissioned artwork by Matthew Griffin. And also a collector's booklet featuring an extract from Shokosugi's new book, Yin Yang Code, Drums of Tenkaibo. Now, folks, I've actually got that book, and it's one I've read partially already, and it's a great mystical martial arts drama, thriller, and all-around mystery. It's great. If you're into heroes' journeys, it's one to definitely check out. And, you know, we may cover that as well on the next look at Shokasugi stuff. So, how did this film fare on the Hallenbach scale? 5 out of 5, folks. There's no getting around it. It is a solid rockin' 5. That's why it's 150 episode number here, folks. It's a special one to watch. Shokasugi in his prime with ninja armor, folks. Taking on the bad guys. Go and check it out. This is Lil Mullet signing off.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and, of course, Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good